Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Undertaking the Podcast. Today's show is brought to you by the Washington State Funeral Directors Association. Ryan and I always say that the only person that understands what you go through or know what you feel, chances are, is another funeral director. So why not belong to a group of like-minded individuals that are striving to improve? With the Washington State Funeral Directors Association, you can do just that. They are your number one source for information, resources, job postings, and continuing education. You can learn more by visiting WSFDA.org, where you can get involved and make a difference. Check them out on Facebook and Twitter and stay up to date. Now, today's episode is a real fun one. I don't know if I've ever really put too much thought into the usefulness of my corpse outside of organ and tissue donation and maybe donation to medical science, but today's episode we'll be talking to Walt Patrick from Herland Forest Cemetery, which is not just a cemetery but a sustainable environment that is striving to preserve this forest. And by being buried at Herland Forest, you're literally guaranteeing that that forest will be in existence, that it won't be developed for anything. And that kind of made my mind hiccup when I went, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. So let's just jump into today's episode. It's Walt Patrick with Herland Forest. You can learn more about them by going to herlandforest.org and listening to today's episode. So thank you all for listening. It's Wednesday night. It's Undertaking the Podcast. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoy our podcasts, give us a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. But let's do this. It's Undertaking the Podcast. Ryan Ballard, we're back here at the Washington State Funeral Directors and Cemetery Associations Convention in Washington State.
Wonderful time.
We're still here on the trade show floor, and we have another great guest, because it's something different than what we've talked about in the past. We have Walt Patrick from Herland Forest Cemetery.
Did he say it right? That's perfect.
Yeah, okay.
Perfect, yeah. I do.
Words are hard for me.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much
for sitting down.
We had a brief maybe email correspondence before the convention here, and that we wanted to talk. Start off and just give us about what you got going on over there at Herland Forest.
Well, we have a 20-acre facility in which we are exploring the potentials of interacting the remains with nature in ways that give people greater healing and a greater sense of association and connection, not only with their loved one in an ongoing way, but with the natural cycles, to help facilitate death being part of life and part of the circle of life, and how to help people feel closer to their loved ones.
Understand. Yeah. So we've got something new going here in Washington. It's made national news everywhere with the introduction of human composting. Legally, it'll be in practice. It's still in theory, but it is legal next summer, 2020. But you've got an interesting take, Art, on human composting. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, we're kind of pleased and amused that it's coming in, because it's what we've been doing for years. Because they're talking about having a large silo, concrete silo, filled with wood chips that they then put remains in at the top, and they take soil out at the bottom, and people just process through this huge silo. Well, we do a similar situation in the sense of, but we use it with a grave. And so we dig the grave, put the wood chips in, put the remains in, put more wood chips in, and allow it, the biological processes to go forward and then nourish a tree. So rather than do it in a generic and broad sense of
an industrial setting, basically.
Yeah, we do it in a specific case so that you can say that your loved one is in this spot and this tree and the resources. So the composting part of it is essential to the biological dynamic of getting the remains back into the biosphere. And so we're doing it right now.
And it's available now. You don't have to wait. You don't have to wait until a facility's built.
And no extra charge.
Now, and I suppose the difference is you don't get, when you say get, remains aren't returned to you in a certain fashion, whether it is 1 cubic yard of compost. Mm-hmm. this is put back into the natural life cycle. It's not, although you do tend the grave, mm-hmm. it's not the actual breakdown of our remains isn't outside of preparing the grave. There's no artificial means to accelerate that, as my understanding with you. It's natural burial.
Other than the fact that we maintain the moisture content in the grave.
Okay.
Because water is based on life. Take life away, it desiccates and goes into a halt. And so our graves, we put tubing to allow us to get water down into the lower grave so that the tree roots and the plants on the grave have a chance to reach down and get deep roots into the ground.
Okay.
And so not only do we plant a tree, we plant dozens of daffodils on there, because what we're building is actually a condominium for ground squirrels. There's all kinds of life going on in the forest, and the squirrels will say, somebody has pre-dug us a home here. We could just move in.
Right.
And the daffodils, the roots and the bulbs are poisonous. And so when the ground squirrel gets in there and starts to dig and eat into the roots, they go, this is nasty, and they pack up and leave.
Okay.
So we put in, and so we love the idea that we're converting a grave into a bouquet.
Yeah.
And the roots and the bulbs get easily moved up and move from grave to grave and expand and grow. And so we just have these bouquets of daffodils and lilies and crocuses that are there.
So I'm sure when that legislation did come up, it probably was a little humorous for you, wasn't
yeah,
it? You're like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, well, we've been doing that. It's just not in that industrialized setting.
Right.
But I imagine the press may have helped you guys out a little bit.
Well, the local TV station out of Portland came out and did a beautiful 2-minute piece on us that shows what we're doing and so on. If you go to Coin, K-O-I-N 6 TV Natural Burial on YouTube, you can pick that up and actually see part of how the forest looks.
Okay, okay.
And you get a more of a vision of the different, there are three different zones. We have the park-like zone, we have the intense forested zone, and then we have the ancient oak forest. We have 300-year-old oak trees. And those are the three different zones, and you can get to see some of them in that YouTube video.
I find that very interesting. Very interesting indeed, that even though the composting part is still waiting for the official go, but it's still being available in a different setting, in a natural setting,
right,
with you guys. And it's not just for Washingtonians. Folks can come from all across the country out,
right,
to you as well.
Right.
I want to roll this into one conversation that we hear so often, and it's normally because of products that someone's mm-hmm. wanting to mm-hmm. sell, or maybe a service that they're wanting mm-hmm. to sell as well. But are you worried about the space with the cemetery?
Not at all, because the way we're set up, it's a very much a conservation, forest conservation pattern. So that, first off, there's a lot of room in 20 acres and so on. And so we're setting aside $1,000 from each interment fee to acquire additional forest land. So moving on to adding to the 20 acres, we're on the edge of the Cascadian wilderness. There's lots of forest there.
Lots of room.
And so expanding it on out, the people who are guarding this forest can then guard the forest that is adjacent to it.
Well, and I've heard this so much, and it's normally product-based, by someone want to push a product onto you as a consumer, and consumers will make purchasing decisions based on faulty information. Mm-hmm. And one we hear so often, it's like it's a gong that they hit that we're running out of room.
Mm-hmm.
My family's from Ireland. They're mm-hmm. still burying folks in Ireland. Yeah. There are ways to use our land wisely, and I think that's the key, is that we use our land wisely.
Washington is highly forested. There's vast amount of forest land that can be enriched by human remains. So it's not even diminishing the options of the forest, it's enhancing them.
Right.
And by when people see the forest as a resource to be seen in a light of sustaining community, and to be precious, because going in and doing this, you clean up the forest, you protect it, you take away the fuel burden that makes it at risk for catastrophic wildfires.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're not running out of space. We're just having to rethink how we do things.
How we use our space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And instead of trying to dominate nature, working within it and working within our own means.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's great. So this is a project that's not brand new. This is over 30 years in the making. Is that right?
Well, it's part of, it's 20 acres out of a 126-acre facility where we're studying the challenge of building sustainable community.
Okay.
And we want to have death be part of the sustainable community rather than be something isolated and off to the side and forgotten about, how to integrate. Because sustainability is all about integration of the different parts of life.
Right.
And that death should be integrated in supporting the community. Whereas most cemeteries are kind of an isolated, separate scenario, our vision is a cemetery, a forest cemetery, that produces resources for that support the community, and therefore the community supports the cemetery, to have an interactive, ongoing relationship with the cemetery area.
I see what you're saying.
Tell us what it looks like. Yeah. If we were there to stand at the cemetery and look upon it, what would we see?
Well, it's in three different zones. It's located at a place of transition. Our county goes from 60 inches of rain in the west to 6 inches of rain in the east. And we're right at the point of transition.
Okay.
So having because ultimately death is kind of one of the great transitions of life. And so it kind of connects in there. And so we have a forest of ponderosa pine, Douglas fir, and Oregon white oak, all growing together in an integrated fashion. In the spring, it's particularly beautiful because we have the wildflowers from the wetlands and the wildflowers from the drylands. And each week, it's like there's a new bouquet of flowers covering the space. So it's a beautiful sight. The eastern third of the forest is a park-like area that's been opened up and improved to the point of being a stable forest. Because in the natural world, forests can become overchoked with fuels and what are called ladder fuels, where there are low-hanging dead branches that can be a true risk. Our biggest danger in our area is wildfire. And so we're very careful about working the forest forward in a manner to make it healthy and safe.
Well, we had a discussion last night that one of the reasons we have such intense forest fires is that we keep putting them out. Tell us what you know about the forest, you're working with.
Our land is an ecology that has evolved with frequent light fires. And so a fire every 2 or 3 years would come through quickly and burn off the waste wood and leave the forest ready for the next cycle of growth. If you think about it, bark on a tree is fire insulation. It's there to protect the cambium, the living part of the tree, from the fire. So, and that works fine as long as it's a light, fast fire. But when there's a huge amount of buildup of forest waste and that catches on fire, then not only does the fire go intensely, but it also goes vertically. And so that's when the fire gets in danger, not just from killing the trees, but just as importantly, from killing the mycological network that's in the ground, because much of the forest is underground. 3/4 of an oak tree is underground. 1/2 of a pine tree is underground. And it all depends on the fungus network down underneath the ground that you don't even see, which is a truly vital part of the forest. So when a catastrophic fire comes through and sterilizes everything, yes, you can put more seeds in the ground, but the fungus underneath that supports those seeds as they get growing has been lost, and that's very slow to come back.
Real quick, so, and maybe you do or maybe you don't know this, so because of all the, what did you call it, forest, it's not forest trash, but the forest, the
waste material,
forest waste,
yeah, it's called fuel.
Forest fuel. There we go. Sorry, the references. That's the reason you're here, buddy. Yeah. So I can ask. But the thing about it within California is that kind of what occurred there.
Yes.
With all those forest fires,
right.
They just didn't have the floor of the forest was nothing but fuel for a fire, basically.
Right, because it had not been routinely and benevolently burned off, because people are legitimately scared of fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a deep primal feel. I mean, when we've been there 30 years, and there have been 3 separate incidences when we've had fire to threaten our home. And when I remember we were sitting out on the picnic table having lunch, and we looked up as the fire came over the breaks, and we saw a wall of smoke in the distance. There was such a primal fear of this, that suddenly there was fire coming from us. It's almost impossible to keep a clear mind if you've not prepared and you don't have your exit strategies and so on. And then when the sheriff's department showed up and said, be prepared to evacuate, we're looking around. We're a sustainability research center, which means we work with the animals who convert the things we can't eat into things we can eat. Like our pigs convert acorns into lard. We have goats that convert weeds into milk. We have sheep that convert grass into wool. And they're telling us we have to abandon the animals that we care for because there's fire coming. So now we have tankers with immediate response, and we have aggressively worked to clean up our forest so that we're as safe as we can reasonably be. You know, you're never perfectly safe, but the forest can be helped so that it is not in the danger that it would be if it were just simply left to its own devices. Humans have stepped in and stopped the natural processes. So we believe that we have a responsibility to nature to go in and do for nature what we've not allowed nature to do for itself.
This is such an interesting conversation, Ryan, because it's not the normal run-of-the-mill conversation with the cemetery. You've got so much going on. I want to roll back a little bit because you were talking about what's going on under the ground, right, and what's going on within that first couple feet,
right,
of soil, of earth. What's mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, so many ways we can go on that. One of the issues is that we don't bury. People think of the 6 feet under thing, and that's not what we do at all, because we don't go any deeper than 3 feet.
Really?
Because people want to be part of the biosphere. People come to the Herland Forest because they want to return to nature, to become a tree, to become a flower. And we want to help that. And so the remains only go 3 feet down, actually a little bit less than that, because we put down a bed of wood chips in the grave and put down like 6 inches. So there's almost a mattress of wood that the remains lay on. And then we put another 150 gallons of wood chips on top of the remains before putting a dirt cap on the top. Mm-hmm. Because we're going to bury plant a tree there in most cases. Most of the people want to become a tree. And so the challenge there is to help the tree get forward. So there's a thing called hugel culture, which was developed in Austria, that involves creating an underground body of wood mass that becomes a water battery. So there's a huge amount of moisture deep in the ground that the tree can access to get it through the dry times. We have lots of moisture in the spring. Herland Forest is a beautiful thing with the wildflowers and everything else. August, September, it is very dry. We generally don't have any rain during that time frame. So by building this structure, using the remains and the wood chips to create a biodynamic area down there that is moist, the trees then have something to go for. They're not stuck on the surface trying to have superficial roots. Each grave, we actually put in a 3-inch diameter, 2-foot long pipe diagonally on both ends of the grave so that when we bring water, we can recharge that underground water battery to help the tree drive its roots down to get that water and thereby being able to make it through the dry season. Because once the fall rains come, everything's fine and the tree's got 9 months to go, but we have to be there to steward the trees, particularly the young trees, to get through those early
tough periods.
Establish, mm-hmm. Yeah. So underground, yeah, we're trying to build a biodynamic space down there where there is a balance of carbon. Wood chips have about a 40-to-1 carbon ratio. The remains have a high amount of nitrogen. And so by putting the two together, the wood chips need the nitrogen from the remains in order to get active. And the remains need the carbon from the wood chips in order to convert into useful soil. So we're addressing the balance by combining the things that need to go in order to make it work biologically.
How many what would you call them, burials? What do you call them there? Yeah.
Natural
burials. How many have you had over there?
Well, this is an ancillary part of our larger sustainability community issue. And so we've been looking at how to do this. It's not a commercial. There's nobody that draws a salary from her land. It is a volunteer charitable 501c3 system that is not driven by the usual commercial concept. So we were looking at how do we do this right? Because we don't have to do it to meet a budget. There's nobody making a living off of this.
You don't have to pay salaries. Yeah. You don't have to, yeah.
So we're not in a hurry. We can take our time to do this right. Because our understanding was that once we start interring remains in the Herland Forest, we're committed. We're not going anywhere. And so we wanted to do it right. And so exploring this. So we took about 10 years to go through the process of getting all the paperwork right, the contracts, working with the state, with the cemetery authority, and figuring out how to do this, because none of us have a background in mortuary work. So we knew we had a lot to learn, and we wanted to learn it in a way that didn't do harm to other people by getting the things wrong because we didn't pay attention or something.
We're kind of hurry.
Yeah, yeah. So we spent about 10 years the process of getting the endowment fund put together, getting the county happy with the plans. We had to go with a conditional use permit. They wanted us to build a parking lot. I mean, there are a whole series of things, all of which were reasonable, but took time. And since there's no big money behind this, there's just people who have a passion for doing this behind this, it took time to put it all together. So we've just been interring remains for about 2 years. And one of the things about this, just because someone decides they want to rest in Herland Forest, that doesn't mean they want to rest today. So we worked out a situation. So we have about 20 people in the forest at this point. But it's also a strategy of long-term conservation of forest. Because if you try and buy land and put it into a conservation easement, that takes a huge amount of money. A lot of capital is tied up. And by definition, that capital is not going to give you a return on the investment. The return is the conservation of the land for future generations. So how to do that and how to have that grow? Well, by interring remains in the forest, one, it can't be developed and it can't be clear cut and turned into some kind of a commercial development because there are remains there.
Yes.
Whereas if you got and put some kind of a limitation on the title of the property, a conservation easement, 20 years down the road, people could go to court and get that lifted and then clear cut the forest and do that. But not if their body's there. So people are actually able to use their remains to guarantee that that forest will not be clear cut.
That's an interesting way to think about it.
I hadn't thought of it that
way. Use your remains to protect something you care about.
To protect the forest.
Yeah. Well, George Fox kind of seeded this mind. He's a Canadian songwriter. There's a beautiful song, you can find it on YouTube, called No Trespassing. And he says, look, build those backyards somewhere else, because here I am. There's no trespassing on this land.
Yeah.
And that was such a powerful concept. And the fact that we can, it costs $3,000 to do an interment in the forest. And we take $1,000 of that and set it aside to a land acquisition fund so we can buy the adjoining forest, which is mostly timber companies and stuff, so that we can expand the amount of forest that's protected by the people who are there. And we refer to them as guardians.
Sure.
That's in a person has chosen to be a guardian.
Now, you are Green Burial Council certified.
Right.
Because we have a lot of listeners that are not within funeral service in any form. Tell us about that certification process.
Well, it's helping people, first off, define what the term means. Because in a lot of ecological terms, a lot of them are fairly fuzzy.
Right.
And so the issue of whether you're a conservation burial or whether you're a hybrid burial, et cetera. And they've been really good to us because we are trying to do, again, something different. We're trying to build a forest that serves the community. That is what's often called in permaculture a food forest. But our name comes from a book that was published in 1915 called Herland, which refers to a vision of a society in which, instead of agriculture, that forestry was used as the source for food and fuel and fiber to sustain that community. And that's what we want to explore, those potentials. And so gaining knowledge and understanding is more important to us than making money. So we tend to go slow and figure things out and say, well, that didn't work terribly well. Or, for example, we're experimenting with planting a cherry tree on cremains. A family in Brooklyn flew their remains out. Their daughter had wanted to move to the Pacific Northwest, and she died. And so they wanted to get her remains out to the Pacific Northwest. So they brought her cremains out, and we worked with a product by a company called Let Your Love Grow, which neutralizes the cremains. The cremains are highly alkaline.
Correct.
And so if you just put those in one place in the ground and plant a tree on it, the tree is going to send down roots, and it's going to run into that alkalinity, and we'll go, whoa, back off, and this is not going to work.
Yeah.
So Let Your Love Grow neutralizes that material. So the family came out, and we, everybody got their hands into the topsoil and the compost and the cremains and the neutral. We mixed it all up, and we put it in the ground on top. I don't know how much I'm going into too much detail, but imagine a 2-foot diameter circle dug 3 feet deep. And then we put a foot and a half of wood chips in the bottom to create that water battery to help sustain the tree. Then on top of that, we put this mixture of topsoil and potting soil and the cremains and the neutralizer and put that in top, and then planted the cherry tree on top of that, and then put more wood chips and hay and stuff to protect the tree. And all of that was great. And then this last winter, we had a surprise spring frost that came in on April 28th and brought in a hard freeze that killed the tree.
Oh, boy.
So we've now removed that tree, and we've put in a new type of cherry tree that is the same cherry tree that you see in Washington, D.C. when the cherry blossoms fly. It's it's a clone of that tree, which is much more frost tolerant. So we're trying to figure out, that's the research we're doing. How do we create a forest that nourishes the animals? Now, that tree will not produce the cherries that you and I might have for dessert, but it produces a cherry that the birds and the squirrels will enjoy, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So supporting the wildlife in our forest is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I think for our listeners, the green burial aspect of this, because sometimes we've got to have some definitions, because the question you mentioned it being fuzzy. How green do you want to go? And there's always different factors that come into play. But bottom line, in general, we're not using caskets. We're not using vaults. Right. We're not doing embalmings.
Right.
So are we using burial shrouds? How are you doing it there?
We're doing it within limits. We're doing it the way the people want it done. It's their loved ones. And so we're looking first and foremost to what their desires are. Mm-hmm. But it runs the gamut from people who want to be buried inside a shroud that is, say, a linen shroud that has been decorated by the family and the loved ones, etc. We certainly have seen that. We have some people who want to be buried au naturel. Nothing. And okay.
We can do it.
We can do that. And so there are, there's a gamut there. One of the most common ones is literally a cardboard box. This, as my understanding, is primarily used for cremation.
Normally.
Yeah. But that's fine with us because the cardboard will decompose as well. And so it's a gamut, and depending on, again, what people want.
Right, right. So we're aiming for that neutral to a positive effect, not a negative one. So when we're looking at your cemetery, we're seeing trees, not headstones.
Right.
So what I'm thinking this through in my head as we plot out a cemetery. Is it plot out normally?
No, not at all. So the remains are, instead of being a regimented, is that a fair description?
Yeah.
It's very different than that, in the sense of the remains are interred in hand-dug graves that are in the spaces in between trees. The trees kind of have their own battle going on for light and water. And so you'll wind up with spaces between the trees that are just too close for some other tree to survive, etc. So we'll go into that center space. And generally, it's a space that somebody's already picked out, because people will come either in anticipation of their own death. They'll come and pick out a spot, or they'll pick out a spot for a loved one. for very commonly, unfortunately, often in a couple, the husband will die first. And we have a number of cases where the wife comes out and picks a spot that she feels looks right. Often she'll camp out and spend the night there in the forest and making sure everything feels good about what that space means to her and to them. And so we'll go ahead and put in the grave there where they want it. And it's all hand dug because two things, we want to minimize the disruption to the root systems of the trees around us. And secondly, we want to minimize compaction of the soil. If we bring a backhoe in to dig the grave, then it's going to affect the biodynamics of the entire area.
Right, right. So, and even on maybe on the small end of that, you know, we're burning fossil fuels. We're using equipment that needle's moving away from that carbon footprint.
Right.
It's the carbon footprint is growing.
Let me ask you this: is there any way of marking these spaces?
Absolutely.
For families? Or
you may have seen these small 2-inch diameter aluminum, like little tea hats, that surveyors use on to mark corners on a property, etc. Well, we have those at, say, Herland Forest Cemetery. And so we mark that on one of the four corners of the plot. And the plot's about 12 by 12 area. And so that's this rebar driven into the ground, and that stake is driven down flush with the top. And we do a GPS recognition of where that point is. So that's the formal legal marker, if you will, for where a plot is. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, we're open to what people want to do. For example, we had an ash interment where the woman had a bench made, and it's a very nice cedar bench that's sitting there in this little forest glade where people can come sit and contemplate the wind moving through the trees. Mm-hmm. And we're 2,000 feet up on a plateau, and you can look out from Herland Forest 20 miles across golden fields of wheat.
Oh, wow.
to the ridges down. So being able to sit there and watch, that was the memorial that she wanted. And it's got a beautiful little plaque on there where it recognizes who it was for and so on. So that's an example.
Yeah, Ryan and I talk all the time the importance of a final resting spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes it's a luxury when we can, you know, pick it or deny it. Mm-hmm. But when we don't have that option, our loved ones are missing or gone, and or that they just chose not to, and then now you have two generations later and they're looking for that spot.
Right.
It's one of those things that may not be important until you want it.
Yeah.
But cemeteries are so interesting, that, and yours is just so, Herland Forest is so unique. And we had mentioned last night when we were talking, as we had a kind of a group meet and greet last night before the conference kicked off, you mentioned that you were looking for some partners to really get into the studying of everything that's going on there. Is that right? Tell us a little more about that if you'd like.
Well, there are a couple of ways on that. One of which is we talked about the fungus in the ground. Mm-hmm. So the elements in the body are crucial to the trees. So the tree can't operate without magnesium. And magnesium, every bit of green that you see in the forest is from chlorophyll. And every molecule of chlorophyll has a single atom of magnesium at its center. Without that magnesium, the tree can't live. There are all kinds of nutrients like phosphorus and potassium and stuff in the remains that the forest needs. But how can that atom get to the tree? And the way it does is the fungus will, a fungus doesn't have any chlorophyll. It has no way to make its own energy. So it has to break down other forms to create that or get it from somebody else. And what it will do, it'll find that atom of magnesium and move it over to the edge of the tree, the tree's drip line where its roots stop out, and trade that atom of magnesium for some sugar. Trees, if you've ever been near a sawmill, you'll smell a sweetness. And that's xylose, that's the tree sugar. And the trees are giving that sugar to the fungus in exchange for what it needs. So there literally is a underground economy going on there that supports mutually the dynamic. So the tree can draw resources from an area 10 times larger than its own root network by reacting with the fungus.
It's so neat.
So that's a part of it.
So Herland Forest is open to working with universities and folks to bring them out to use this sustainable land to further our knowledge about this, because there's so much we don't know.
We're not aware of how that process of the stuff, of the elements going from the body to the tree, how does that happen? What time frame? And we'd love to see, for example, some PhD candidate wanting to do a longitudinal study to sample the ground and see, okay, you put a remains here, you got a tree over there, how long does it take to get the material from one to the other?
Yeah.
Because when you talk about trees, the human time scale is, the trees operate, we have 300-year-old oak trees there, you know, so it's...
our life's minuscule in comparison, yeah.
But and how to get some hard numbers on that would be really fascinating. We'd love to see that. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is looking at, for people who want to kind of join in the intersection of death care and intentional community. Because we are there doing all of this intentionally. We're not doing it commercially. We're doing it intentionally because we want the kind of life that you get when you live close to nature, when you recognize the power and sovereignty of nature, that we are all natural systems, which is what death is about, recognizing the sovereignty of nature.
Real quick, I guess kind of where I wanted to go with this, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but are these families having services at your facility, or are they having no service whatsoever, and this is their service, the idea of being doing a green burial?
All of the above.
So it's a plethora.
Absolutely. And for example, we just, this last winter, we had a remarkably challenging snow event, the worst in 18 years that we've been there. And so there were a number of people who, they needed their loved ones interred, and we made that happen. We have, for example, a full sleigh that can carry. We had 3 foot of snow, and the sleigh worked just fine. And they had a bunch of young people in the family show up with snowshoes, and like dogs on a snow sled pulled the sleigh with their grandmother to her resting place in the middle of the forest. It was glorious.
A family won't forget that.
It was glorious.
And everything I hear you say, I don't hear anything about you just hire this guy and they'll make it disappear. It's always something the family's interacting with.
Yeah.
I think that's so important that we can't express enough. Sometimes when it comes from a funeral director, sometimes the earmuffs go on. We don't want to hear what you have to say. Mm-hmm. But I think it's so important that, you know, we encourage families to get in part about this, to ask questions, to learn, because all of us are there to help and do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's what I appreciate.
So there were a number of people in that family who were, because they were aged, were not able to make that 3/8 of a mile trek from the paved county road to the gravesite. So they came back in May when we were in the incredible bounty of wildflowers, and they had a camp out picnic, and everybody got together and told stories and sat around the grave and had a picnic. And
that's perfect.
So that was a balance, because it's an ongoing process. It's not just a matter of, okay, the body's in the ground,
off we
move
go
on. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a matter of we have a 40-acre campground. We have propane-fired summer showers and stuff so that people can come and gather in memory. We kind of hope to reclaim the Memorial Day that used to be, where people used that to go out and remember the dead and decorate the graves.
Sunday was picnic day.
Yeah.
You know, many years ago, that out to the cemetery you go. And you know, you talked about your loved ones. Mm-hmm. You didn't, you know, just move on.
So some people want to, there are issues about bringing people together, because families are so dispersed today that even if somebody wants, everything's in order and you could bury within a few days, still they have loved ones who want to fly in from the East Coast and so on. So it's almost a minimum 2 to 3 weeks needed for a gathering before the interring. And so, you know, that's part of it. So we see it much more as a process than just simply, I know for sure in the Jewish culture, they want to be buried within 24 hours and so on. And we're happy to help with whatever needs to be done on that. But on the other hand, we want people to take it at the time frame that makes sense for their family.
Yeah.
We don't care. We're there. We live there. This is what we are. It's what we do. So tell us what you need. How can we help?
Yeah. And how can funeral directors in your area support this project and support their community members that are interested in this?
Well, you know, we're a new facility and we're just learning. And so having the help of the existing funeral directors to let people know that there is an option like this available means a lot to us. And we appreciate that. We have some funeral directors on our website that have referred people to us, and we're happy to mutually support them. We have an extensive website at herlandforest.org that goes into the details, shows exact pictures of different examples of some of the ways this happens. We're really excited about some of what we think are very innovative ways to meet people's needs. For example, we had a couple come to us that wanted to be buried shoulder to shoulder. And my understanding is that you can't do that in most cemeteries because you have these concrete vaults that limit how close you can get to each other.
It can be vault to vault, but
yeah, but that's it. So in this case, instead of if you think of a standard grave as like a single bed, we made a grave that was like a double bed. So it was twice as wide, extra wide grave. And we put a sheet of 3/4 treated plywood down the center of the grave to divide it into the two halves. Now, when somebody goes pre-need and we put together a grave for them, we go ahead and fill it full of wood chips because the ground may be frozen. The ground may be super dry. And hard. And so we just prepare the grave ahead of time. And we have even half a dozen inventory graves that are ready if somebody needs a grave quickly. But so the idea was that we could remove the wood chips from one side when one person died and put that person's remains up against the plywood barrier and then fill the grave back in. And then when the other person died, we could open up the other side of the grave and the plywood would prevent the first grave from falling into the second. Mm-hmm. And open it up and put the second person shoulder to shoulder to the board and then fill that grade up and then
pull the plywood out.
And so the two people would ultimately end up being shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
What a fun thing.
Yeah. I think that's, I don't know. I love the way you're thinking about this and actually all the extra that you guys are doing there, because it's not just a cemetery. It's not a, well, it's not a for-profit cemetery. It's a
sustainable community.
It's a community and a cooperative one, but it is from people. It's a community of people who, if saving the forest is the last thing you want to do with your life, we'll help you.
Check the box. Right here. Here's how we do it. Now, last night we had a discussion about death with dignity. Some people, some listeners may have no idea what we're talking about, but you've got a little bit of an experience with this. Ryan and I don't, but let's talk about that.
In Washington State, the legislation, and in Oregon, there's very similar legislation, that if a person is terminally ill, if they have a diagnosis that says they only have 6 months or less in which to plan their transition, then they can take control of exactly when that transition takes. Now, generally, there will be a treating physician who has been working with them for a period of time. And there'll be, in our case, a local physician that also has to sign off on it. So you have a second opinion that, yes, this is a terminal condition. One of the professionals we deal with had a secretary whose dear friend in Idaho got a terminal diagnosis. And the doctor said, have you thought about moving to Washington? Because Washington has this law and Idaho doesn't. My understanding is that 6 out of 7 people in the United States do not have access to death with dignity. And so those people can come to Washington, establish residency, and take control of their passing. And we want to facilitate that.
Is this a new project for you, or have you been thinking about this over time?
I have chronic joint failure. I am fully disabled, and there's nothing they can do. It's an inoperable condition, and I don't know how much longer I have. So that's the way I expect to go out. And so it's something of very personal interest to me. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to explore that. We're using ourselves as the pioneers to figure all this stuff out. And so.
Death with dignity, I think, is nationally probably a very controversial subject. And I think when we deal with human nature, it's, when anything's controversial, I think humans, it's human nature for us to want to tell you what to do because it's important to me. I don't know. I couldn't tell someone
this is just me, that if that's what they wanted and it is available to them, I don't know what I would say. Talk them into it, out of it, anything, because it's none of my business. That's their personal decision. Same way with whether you choose burial, cremation, blown out of a can, and all those things. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very personal decision, but it is contentious across the country, I believe.
And legitimately so, I think, because, as you say, people identify with how they feel about things, etc. There's also a question of vulnerability and transparency.
Yes.
And you're dealing with a very vulnerable population. When someone is in chronic pain and facing no hope, what is a reasonable course of action for them to take? It's who can say, you know? And so to have reasonable, competent people talking about it and examining it and making sure that all the options are on the table, that nothing's been overlooked. No one person can do that. You need the help of people who are skilled. For example, we're looking for a death doula that would like to come and work with us on this process of helping transition. We have a 20-foot by 20-foot two-story cabin that we're fixing up so that people could actually come, stay in the forest, and reach their point of peace and transition. So we're exploring all of that stuff.
So possibly we'll have that option, or folks will have that option to come to the forest, mm-hmm. claim their residency,
right,
and do what they need to do.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, just in general, I think we need to, you know, have an open ear and mm-hmm. probably a closed mouth, and really just be there to. Well, it's just a deep subject that it's tough to go. You know.
And these conversations that have to be had can't be had, I believe, in a day.
No.
They take time. And 'cause we have to tease out the layers of our own understanding, because we're all caught up in the web of history, in the web of the moment. How to get all that stuff out? All I know to do is sitting under a tree and watching the sunset and talking with people about it is the way I think that it needs to be done, so that the complete process can be done to the degree it can, and then a person moves on.
I think it needs to be done slowly, gently, with an open ear.
Yeah.
I'm a very firm believer in I want to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
But I'm also not going to tell you what to do. But just human nature. We just naturally want to tell someone else what to do. It's I don't know.
Well, we're looking for a person who wants to be part, who doesn't want to be part of the corporate world, mm-hmm. who wants to back off from it to the point where they can embrace the deeper sensitivity of it rather than the commerciality. And I don't mean to be in any way negative about the death care industry, because it's vital. There's a lot of people. We're talking about a very niche group of people who want to own their own death. Mm-hmm. And do it in their own way. And that's, most people don't even want to think about it. You know, Woody Allen saying, you know, I don't mind dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens. Hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of people, there are some people who do want to be there when it happens, and to do it their own way. Mm-hmm. And so that we think that's an important.
I think there's plenty of space in this world for all of us.
Oh, and we've got to talk about it too, because this is a completely different way of doing things.
And I think, so, you know, we, as funeral directors, we need to be resources to consumers, that someone who wants something.
There's
like
an
this,
option.
Hey, we know a fella, or
I got a guy.
We heard this on the podcast. Let me go find it again and find up contact information. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we really appreciate you having this conversation. Is there any, Ryan, you got, your wheels are turning.
Where can people get a hold of you guys and kind of research you? And
Herlandforest.org is the first place thing. And we're more than happy to field questions from people who are interested in the possibilities inherent in this. I just met with Alaska Airlines 2 weeks ago to talk about being able to fly remains in from anywhere around the country, what's involved in that and the details of it. Somebody could be in New Jersey and wanting to go to the Pacific Northwest, and we want to help make that happen, because mm-hmm. you know, whatever we can do to fulfill their visions of how they want to rest, that's what we're here for.
That's awesome.
So go on the website, send us an email.
Yep.
And happy to go forward.
So anyone, if anyone's interested, you can go to herlandforest.org, or, you know, he gave us a shout out. So if you're a death doula looking to expand what you're doing,
there you go.
Or if you're, Heck, if you're a university student, you need an interesting project. Mm-hmm. We've got a place for you right here at Herland Forest. So,
opportunities.
Well, we want to thank you so much for chatting with
appreciate
us.
Appreciate you sitting down.
Fine. Appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for stopping by.
And I hope you get a chance to visit.
Oh, yeah.
I understand you're out here from a long way away, but, you know, we have a campground, and we also offer access to people in the industry because people who deal with death are often isolated.
Oh, yeah.
And so to have a place where they're capable of kicking back and being welcome and to enjoy it. I mean, people come from all over the country to fish the river that we're near, and there's huge amounts. You can go windsurfing in the afternoon. You can do skiing in August on Mount Hood. I mean, the area for where we're at for ecological recreation is huge. So if you're in the industry, you've got friends in Washington.
That's awesome, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Undertaking the Podcast. That's been Walt Patrick with Herland Forest Cemetery in Washington. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Undertaking the Podcast is brought to you in part by Indiana Donor Network. Indiana Donor Network's mission is to save and enhance the quality of life through organ, tissue, and eye donation and transplantation. Each year, they are saving and healing more lives than ever before. Thank you to everyone who is united with the Indiana Donor Network to ensure the desire to give meets the enormous need for that gift. Indiana Donor Network is committed to partnering with funeral directors to ensure that families are well served. To learn more, visit indianadonornetwork.org.